It's time.
Once again, it's time to open your ears and expand your mind. Or maybe it's dull your mind. Either way, I think these boys have something to say. So sit back, grab a brew. We're going to have some too. And give you our point of view here on Talking Brap.
Shit. So, welcome back. Talking Brap Season 2.
It's hard.
Man, it is hard.
And it's long.
It is hard.
I thought that was a sound drop off the board that was so clear and
it
perfect.
It is big, man. And it is hard.
It's big.
Yeah, so welcome back. Season 2. I think we're episode 13.
And it's long.
I'm about to find out here. I'm going on to my website.
And it's talkingbrap.com.
Let's see how many episodes I got, because I don't know.
He's trying to do the intro.
There is no intro. That's how we roll here, and it is hard.
It's hard.
No, we're on episode 15. Sorry. Episode 15.
And it's long.
Freaking it's so long.
We've had a productive season.
We have. We've done really good this year. We missed out the first few months. Whatever went on, I think it was the early part of COVID.
Yes. We doubled our viewership to 4.
We have doubled our viewership to 8.
Oh, seriously?
Yes.
Hell yeah.
Yes.
I want to welcome all of
y'all. Yes. No, that's, you know, that's like a 300% increase.
Well, we doubled last year, and this year we doubled again, so we're at 8 now. Yeah. Yeah, we're getting up there.
And isn't that the, what's that song? The Moving on up.
Moving on moving up.
Moving on up. Moving on up. Deluxe apartment in the sky.
Was it like Sanford and Sons or something? Like, no, it couldn't have been Sanford and Sons because they were never moving on up.
That was, man, it was either right before or right after.
We sidetrack from the very beginning?
We didn't even
make it on to the topic.
Yes, we did.
So
it's big.
The Jefferson.
The Jeffersons intro. Yes, that's right. That's it. I was Googling it as we speak.
Yeah, it's hard. It just hit me.
Moving on up. Let's see. Does it actually play it?
It's long.
Let's see.
Protect your ears.
No thanks. I don't want to join YouTube Plus.
Well, we're moving on up.
You 8 viewers and counting.
At this rate, I don't care who you are.
That song got some soul right there, boy. Yeah.
At the rate we're going, though, we're going to catch Joe Rogan in 2177.
Yes, correct. Yes. Right about the time that we die.
If he stops now.
Actually, we will never catch Joe Rogan. But
we will if he quits.
If we can interweave motorcycles and politics, we might have some.
I try to stay off politics, man. I don't want to talk. You know what? I don't like to listen to other people talk about that shit, so I don't want to talk about it and let them listen to me.
Ratings, man. Yeah. It's all about ratings.
Yeah, fuck all that shit. So today I wanted to talk about
politics of motorcycles.
Politics of motorcycles. No, one of our coworkers here, Shane, he's down in Orlando.
Getting learned.
Yeah, he's getting learned. He's doing some dealer classes, and it got me thinking, not everybody works in a dealership. You know, so there's always outlets out there for you to better yourself as a technician or even a salesperson. In your case, Aaron, you know, to continue your education, because you know most of us go to school, we get out, and then it's all work from there.
My education continues every day.
It does.
Every day I do something, I touch something, I learn something, I try not to make the same mistake twice.
Now out front, that's a lot easier to learn because every day is a lot, you know, different. You don't do services every day or tires. Some guys do tires every day or whatever it is.
I don't know. Matt's learning severely every day, and usually not in a good way.
Yeah, he has learned quite a few lessons.
Today was my second full transmission cassette. I think I only had to ask one major question. I pretty much got everything that I needed.
In that aspect up front, you know, when you're selling, the best thing you can do is keep printouts of the ROs that you've done. So if you're going to do something that maybe you're going to sell somebody else,
I got a fat stack.
You keep that RO, that parts list when the job is done.
When it worked.
Yep. You know, when you quote it, that's one list. But when the job gets done, those are the lists that you keep because, okay, we finished this job with these parts. And then you can use that onto your next estimate. And this is what separates
the men from the boys.
The really good salespeople from the guys that are just collecting a paycheck.
I am not hitting them tonight.
Yeah. Dude, you had a rough night last night.
I worked with a guy in Claremont that...
I broke you.
His name was Sean, and he I don't want to say a weird dude, because we're all weird, but not a lot of people really liked him.
You speak for yourself, buddy.
He was very particular about everything, but what he had a camera set up and everything, and now this was quite a few years ago. He would, every bike that he put a different exhaust on, he would go out and do a video and a sound of that exhaust. And he would keep them on his hard drive in his computer. And he was what we called a Chrominator or Chrome consultant or what's the other one? There's a Chromosexual. That's it. Chromosexual. I was like, there's one that's kind of like a dickhead thing to say. Chromosexual. So the Chrominator, he would, you know, bring guys in and sit them down at his desk and be like, this is what a stock bike sounds like. You know, on his computer, this is what this sounds like. This is what this sounds like. This is what this sounds like. And he sold a shit ton of exhaust that way. When he would do new stuff, he took pictures. He kept all of that stuff on his computer. And when it came down to selling stuff, he was great at it. Oh, you want to know what this looks like on your bike? Here, let me, you know, blah, 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 pulls it up, shows it to him. He put a lot of work into that, and he ended up at, I want to say hard drive, or I don't think it was hard drive, but one of those as a rep, you know, moved on to like the distributor side. But his sales were always good. He'd kill it. And customers hated, like, I don't want to say hated him, but like, I can't tell you how many customers it would be like, fuck him. I'm not going in there. Every time I go in there, I spend $2,000-$3,000. Fuck him.
Worked over.
You know what I mean? And it was like, well, that's what he's supposed to do. You know, like, you can't get mad at the guy for doing his fucking job.
Yeah, have some self-control, buddy.
Yeah.
You wanted to spend the money.
You obviously wanted to spend it, or you wouldn't have, you know, but at the same time, you know, they kept going back, you know, they did that. And, you know, if you've done this for quite a few years, especially they got like the, I've known a few parts guys that have done it for 20, 25 years. They didn't look shit up in books really anymore. You know, most of the stuff that people came for, they'd done 100-200 times at least. And they knew the part numbers. They knew exactly where it was. They just walk back there and grab it and hand it to you, you know?
Yep.
That's a rarity, you know, but the newer guys, you know, they have to get there by either remembering or writing stuff down or whatever it is. And that's a big one to start with, you know, is using what you've done to learn. As a technician, we do that every day.
When I was at Superstition, we had a parts of service guy that was, he was a tech for like 20 years and then he got out of that and then became a parts salesman for like 10 years and got tired of that and then went to parts of service, and it was so badass having him,
like, because, encyclopedic knowledge of everything you were doing, basically, right? Like he was kind of like a instep with what you needed and knew you know, parts, like knew what was going on all the time.
And there we had a you know, much better, bigger building in this, and we had a good setup, so we had all of our special tools were all back in our parts of service area. He had like his own room. So when you would do a job and like, say you're doing like a transmission job, when he'd pull your parts, he'd go, oh, here, let me get the tools. Yeah, boom, boom. Oh, cool. And he just put all the special tools in the basket and you're just like, fuck, I love this guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's awesome.
That's a whole nother level.
Yeah.
You know, there really is, you know, at my old shop, we had a couple guys been doing it a long time. And so I'd walk back and be like, hey, I'm going to do a shift shaft seal on this. And they'd go grab all the parts. You know, it was most of the time. And then Steve, he was a dick sometimes. So you'd walk up there with like an oddball part and oh, hey, Steve, I need this. You need me to look it up for you? He'd be like, yeah, look it up. Let me know. And then you'd go look it up and come back. He'd have it sitting on the fucking counter. Like, you motherfucker, dude, why do you do that to me every time? You would, every time you come up and he kind of look at you and be like, oh, you need me to look it up. You know, no big deal. I'll go look it up and come back. He'd be sitting on the counter. I'm like, I fucking hate you, man. But, you know, as a technician, I think a lot of our continuing education, if you will, aside from the experience of what you're working on, comes from the people next to you. I think if you're in a good shop and you have a good relationship with the guys around you, when you find new things that you haven't seen before or you haven't run into before, we all tell each other, you know, we grab each other like, dude, come look at this. I've never seen this before, you know, and there's a reason for that, because we all know we want to know the next time this comes in. I want to know that that's what the problem is. You know what I mean? So that's a lot of where you learn is from the guys next to you. I've known shops where guys, you know, Jordan said, you know, one of the shops he was at, that like nobody talked to each other. They were, you know, if you went over and asked them something, they were like, fuck you, get away from me. I don't understand that.
Yeah, I don't
like
either.
How do you better yourself as a shop in general like that? You know, you're just running a machine at that point. You know,
yeah. And well, all that has to do too with just being stuck in a comfort zone, right? Like, do things that put yourself out of the comfort zone a little bit, and you'll learn.
Oh, absolutely!
You'll absolutely learn doing that.
If you're in your comfort zone every day, that's boring. I mean, you know, we get out of our comfort. I get out of my comfort zone, and I might bitch a little bit, but yeah, that's why I do this job. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh shit, that trike! I got to put balancer bearings on. Never done that before. Okay. Fuck it, let's do it, you know. I mean, I don't balk it too much. I might bitch a little bit or my biggest thing is when I enter a job, I want to like start it properly. So sometimes I'll grab a work order, I don't understand what's going on or what's up, and I will spend 10 or 15 minutes getting everything figured the fuck out about what I'm doing and what I'm not doing and everything before I start.
Yeah.
Because fuck, man, if I spend 20 minutes doing something I'm not supposed to, that's worse. That's way the fuck worse.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
So a lot of times I have to like get shit straight, and I want to know what I'm getting into. I worked on a sporty this weekend. We put the guy burn up his clutch on the dyno drag, and he had a Recluse EXP clutch.
The centrifugal.
The auto clutch.
Auto clutch. So it's got an expander plate. I think y'all saw it when I had it apart. And then they have what they call a Radius CX clutch, which is the same thing with Recluse plates and steels in it. So when we went back, we upgraded him, you know, to that.
The good stuff.
I've never done one of these before. So I'm playing off of my experience of doing a lot of clutches. I mean, I get how clutches work. And so, you know, Saturday I'm doing this stuff and I'm adjusting this thing, and I had instructions for something, but it wasn't the right kit, but it was a similar auto clutch, whatever it was. So I was like reading the instructions, trying to get through. I figure stack height, all that is what it is. So I wasn't worried about that. Get it all in. And the auto clutch part just would not work. And
you're afraid to rev it. You're going to go like, wow.
Well, you can't rev it. You couldn't even rev it. Yeah. You couldn't even rev it with the clutch in. If you pulled the clutch in and put it first and rev it, you're done. It's gone. So I've call it quits because it's Saturday, and I tried to call the company. They were closed. I went online to get their manuals. Their links are all dead. And I was like, all right, I'm not going to waste a bunch of fucking time on this while I don't have any. There's nothing more in my head than what I've done. I'm not going to learn anything more. And, you know, come to find out, for those listening that know how to adjust the clutch, most of the time you kind of bottom out your adjuster and then give it some play. Mm-hmm. And on those clutches, you actually do quite the opposite. You run it in, and then you run it in so it separates the plates. So when that centrifugal expander plate eats up the difference, it starts to work, which makes sense when you're thinking about it. You know, when you don't have like instructions and everything, I couldn't figure that out. And of course, the guy, you know, I'm talking to the guy, he knows this shit. I'll give the guys at Recluse some credit. I think it took a 10-minute phone call with him, and I was pretty particular about asking questions and, these are the thicknesses of the discs I have. Is this right? You know, I want to make sure the other guy got me right. And when it was all said and done, he put me down the right path. I went back, adjusted it one time, and it worked perfect. And I was like, oh, thank you, God. And that was a lesson learned.
Look who's calling.
Yeah, I'm going to have to.
Speaking of school.
Yeah, so Shane's trying to call. So what's up, buddy? How you doing, man?
Oh, you know, ready to get the hell out of Florida.
Yeah? Why? Florida's awesome.
Florida sucks.
I love Florida. That's why I moved to Tennessee.
Yeah, right?
So how's school going, man?
You know, it's kind of one of those things. It's cool to take apart a street, even though I'll probably never do it again.
You won't.
But the Sportster, you know, Sportster's a little quick little refresh. But other than that, man, so, you know, a lot of things transfer over as far as common sense goes to the street. But you learn the cool little stuff, and, you know, the transmission's a little different. That's, you know, that's pretty cool. But
well, we were kind of talking about, you know, how you kind of better yourself, continuing education, if you will. Not everybody has access to dealer classes. And I thought, you know, we kind of give an idea of what it's like to go to dealer class. And, I, you know, me, Mike, we've been. So what day are you in? You're in day 3 today?
Yeah.
Okay.
We finish up tomorrow.
Yeah. So what day 1, day 2, you did what, streets maybe?
No, we started out with the sports. Oh,
so you did sporty first. Okay.
We did some lesson stuff, and then, you know, compression leak down talk, things like that.
Yeah.
And then went into the tear down of the Sportster, which, you know, I just rebuilt my Sportster and there's no fluids and on an engine stand, so it comes apart pretty dang quick.
Oh, I imagine.
In order for everybody to, you know, a year out of school, so they're actually getting a lot of info, which is great, but it's also somebody like me who's used to being flat rate tech and time is of the essence. It was a big shock of kind of like, okay, cool. I took the rockers off. What do you want me to do? Oh, let's hang out and wait for everybody to get there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's something people don't understand. So you kind of go through steps and they'll tell you, hey, we're going to get to the lower rockers, for instance. And you, if you're quick, like Shane, you know, and most of us that probably go, I'm sure Mike, same way. If I'm not the first one done, I'm probably the second one done. And then you wait for everybody else to kind of catch up so that they can explain what the next step is. And this is something that aftermarket shops, this is really what separates dealerships from aftermarket shops, is the dealer support, the dealer education. So, Shane's in Orlando. He, you know, you took apart a sporty, you're working on your street now.
Yeah, we disassembled all the way down, split the cases, took the transmission apart, and put the transmission back together and back in the case half today. So tomorrow we'll go through.
Now, are they on the stand?
So they're on the stand until you go to separate the cases, because the way it bolts to the stand is the through bolt through the back of the motor, the case. Correct. So you got to take the case off
of
the stand.
But they're not in the bike. And
separate there. No, they're not on the bike, and, you know, there's no electronics hooked up. Half of them don't even have intake. You know, one guy didn't even have push rods in his 40. Half of the Sportsters, you know, the rear cylinder's missing both push rods.
Oh, man.
You know
those Sportsters have probably been taken apart and put back together so many times.
Oh, I know. One of the guys I was helping with his shift fork and, like, getting the shifting to set up, and he's like, man, I don't know why this thing's shifting so rough. I know it's right. I'm like, it's not like it's been taken apart and put back together a million different ways. You know? Like, the cases are stamped with all X's all the way across. Like, they never went in the field. They just went straight to the school.
Yeah.
But it's cool. I mean, you know, some of these guys had, you know, DSO or dealer service operations and got to do valve lash on the street.
So how many guys?
Do some things where.
How many guys are you in class with?
I didn't have any of that. There's seven of us.
Seven. What do you think the most experience in the class is in time?
Probably 4 or 5 years.
So you?
Yeah.
you have the most experience in the class.
Yeah.
Have
there's some guys that, you know, there's a couple guys from Pensacola. There's 3 guys from Pensacola. And one guy's taken apart a street a couple times, you know, rebuilt streets, and they, you know, he was the street guy.
Is that us?
And
Yeah,
that's our okay. group.
Okay.
So
have you been handing out cards and drumming up business?
Yeah, at first, like in the first day, I don't think they took a liking to me very much. But as the time's gone on, we've been a little bit more.
Why didn't they take a liking to you?
I don't know. Some people are just, happy to meet you and talk to you. And when they saw my shirt, and they all kind of looked at me, and we were talking about stuff, and they're just very, very short as far as the conversation went for the first day or so.
Well, like those guys?
Well, hey, man, they don't work at Moonshine Harley Davidson, so I'm sure it sucks for them.
Yeah, I think they're a little bit like, haters. Fuck those guys. They keep killing us in numbers, so.
Yeah. Well,
I did learn a couple of cool little things, like we talked about. The instructor is Scott Freisack, and he's, done a lot of pit crew stuff for road racing and worked in I think he's like 35 years in the industry through different companies and different, working on old stuff, through vintage racing. And so he's really easygoing, but he's very knowledgeable. So it's pretty cool. And
yeah.
Like one thing I didn't really know is about the water test for a noisy Sportster.
I know.
When it gets up to operating. So we talked about that a little bit. And then, we're talking about leak down and how.
Do you probably don't know what that is.
A water test?
Yeah. So long story short, basically you get a sporty hot, get it up to operating temperature. And if it's making noises, the complaint would be noise while hot.
Which they make you take anyway, a garden
hose or whatever and pour water over the kidney on the side because it's where all of the bushings that the cams ride on are.
Shrink them and-
so you cool that down real quick while it's running and it should shrink the bushings. If the noise goes away, those bushings are fucked.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And then we talk about, for compression and leak down and, different things and having the,
how no, you'll no. never do one on a Sportster ever.
Yeah.
The only time they break is like complete catastrophic failure and you don't need to take them apart to figure out what's going on.
Like compression is, like he said, first thing you do is compression is get the motor hot. He's like, half the time you're doing a fucking compression test, the bikes aren't running. That's exactly. Why they're there.
Exactly.
So, yeah. But the cool thing to talk about, like leak down, where the manual says 10% variance and he goes 10% ish. He's like, if you have a sporty with an 883, it's like a 3-inch cylinder versus a 4.25 bore cylinder. 10% on one and 14% on the other is probably pretty close.
Yeah.
Because of how much surface area there is. But he's also talking about, doing if the cylinder is bottled in the center. It's got good compression at the top, but if it's got a big score or something in the center, you're not going to notice that. So you get it to top dead center compression and you do your leak down or you bottom dead center and you do your leak down, you have 100% leak down. And then you rotate the motor over until you build up pressure and see and set the center to test the center cylinder.
Makes sense.
It's little stuff like that. Yeah. Guys having issues with their bike running, starting up cold, no problem. And when it gets hot, it doesn't want to start. And then when it cools down, it starts again because, the valve seats are beat from them revving it up or, the push rods are adjusted wrong. And so when it gets hot, everything swells and it's hanging the intake valve open just enough to where when it's hot, it doesn't have, starting compression.
You can't beat 883 valves up enough. I can tell you that by experience. You cannot beat those things up enough.
Yeah, it's like those guys that just ring off the rev limiter. Park, your stop sign racers. I was like, yeah, I know one of those.
I think there's no worse way to do a motor than Top Gear redline. Like that's the worst you can do to a motor because that's the most load everything you can be doing. So if you can bounce it off the rev limiter for 20 or 30 minutes, like I have,
like you do. Right
now. Yeah. That motor is fucking strong.
To get it up to 90 miles an hour.
Well, yeah, I have to exactly. Yeah. I wouldn't be able to go fast any other way. Yeah, we've talked about that. People are like, oh, that bike's pretty quick. I'm like, yeah, that's everything it's got. I ride it with everything it's got all the time. 100%. Otherwise, it's really fucking slow.
And the street, he was talking about the wet sleeves on the street. And he pulls the cylinder over and he just pushes down on the base of the cylinder pops the sleeve out of the 500. And he goes, yep, that's it. I'm like, that's all this cold nut fucking thing together?
Yeah, some O-rings, right?
Yep. Yeah. Lord Rings for.
Well, and so well, when that came out, the and then you guys, we were all working then.
Head holds a sleeve on.
Well, yeah. And when that came out, they had said they were going to do a bunch of performance shit, and it made sense. It was like, dude, you could pull the sleeve out of that cylinder and put a, you know, a different sleeve, a Nicosil sleeve or something, you know, whatever you had to do, whatever you could do.
Yeah,
and
put a sleeve in there. Yeah, Rev makes a 50cc over sleeve for both of them.
They do?
Yeah.
No, that's the first I've heard of that.
There's no tuning.
So, whoa. Yeah, he was basically saying you could do, like, the streets with the stage one actually get, like, a slip-on and a download, actually get 4 to 5 more miles a gallon on fuel range. They run better when they have a stage one.
I believe that.
But he was saying if you do that, you basically do a street tuner and you just max everything out. And I'm like, so it's running super lean. That's why it's quicker.
They run everything super lean.
Well, yeah, that 750 especially feels totally choked off from the factory. Like that motor feels like it wants to give a lot more power than it does. And people who have ridden them, we've just been waiting for that to happen. Because, dude, you could probably make a pretty quick little bike out of that with the right parts, the right cams, the right stuff, you know.
Yep.
You could probably make a pretty quick little bike, but just nobody wants to, man.
Yeah, well, they're doing like 800, you know, the
don't leave it there. Right. Hey, you know. Did you go underwater?
Remove the phone from your ass before you speak. I do that to my wife. She gets so fucking mad to me.
Call me quick.
Sorry, I was holding the phone with my ear so I can get another beer out of the fridge.
I just got another beer out of the fridge too. Here.
I got a couple more to finish off before I check out in the morning. So
yeah. So
yeah.
So today, and to give people an idea, so today at a slow pace, you split the cases on a street, completely disassembled, split the cases on a street,
and took the transmission apart, put it back
together. Transmission apart and back together. At a slow pace.
At a slow pace.
Yeah.
Like a snail's pace.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you.
I mean, granted, the motor's already out. It probably takes an hour and a half to get the motor out of that motherfucker anyways.
Yeah, I was going to say, so, you know, when I went to mid-frame, the street wasn't out. You know that video?
When I went, brand new.
You know the video that you watch? That John, what's his name? John, guy that does the video. You know what I'm talking about, Shane?
For the PhD? Yeah, like the entry, the service bulletin?
But you watch that video, right, at the beginning, where the guy's talking about it. He kind of goes through and does, like, the 15-minute version of everything you're going to do in the class. Don't you watch that video?
No, we didn't do that.
Oh.
We just did a little slideshow. Yeah,
it's 2020. They don't watch videos like that anymore. No. So in fact, one of the guys
theme song from PhD. Welcome to PhD service training.
And that, well, but then it changed and went.
So one of the cool things, and they probably showed you when you were in LiveWire class, the AR stuff that they're working on.
Oh yeah.
Which is cool. Like you can pull up, like they have it for the live wire. You can pull up the exploded view and take shit apart.
We don't have it.
The engineers have it.
They have augmented reality where you can
point your phone. Yeah. So the idea would be you pick up your phone, you point it at the bike, and it shows you how it comes apart, basically.
Yeah.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah. It's fucking cool. When you do live wire, you'll see it. They showed it to us.
And it's yet another layer of separation between engineers and real life.
Oh yeah.
So the engineers get even more idiotic about how the shit actually works, because now they go, well, all I gotta do is pull right over here on this piece of air and that whole side cover comes off. I don't understand why it's gonna take you 35 minutes.
Yeah, but you know, you're at dealer class, and like I said, we're talking about kind of continuing education. There is no better way to learn how to take a motor apart and put it back together than in a class like that. Because there are people to ask questions. And when it's all said and done, it's not a customer bike that has to roll out and the guy's going to put thousands of miles on and come back with a fucking oil leak or whatever the fuck it is. You know what I mean? Your margin of error is much larger in the classroom. And you have a chance to do it as a learning experience. Oh yeah, you miss all your tools. It is so, that is one of the biggest things I struggle with when I go, is like figuring out where stuff is, and nothing's organized the way I would. Yeah, nothing is organized.
Craftsman ratcheting wrenches.
They have ratcheting wrenches?
Like your ratchet, your normal ratchet.
Okay.
A Craftsman, like
what?
Probably a 12 point, Snap-on? Like a 12.
They've always been Snap-on.
Wow. Yeah. I got a fucking Craftsman button style ratchet, and it sucks.
Yeah.
I've never been to a
I've never
been to a Harley-Davidson class where they had anything other than Snap-on tools.
Correct.
I think they're saving some money by replacing stuff, and it's just they're going.
Well, from what I understand, the Snap-on MMI like dealer relationship has kind of been muddied. You know, the waters have been muddied since we've been through. Like, there was a much closer tie to like Harley and Snap-on and MMI and all that. But from what I understand, Snap-on's trying to get out of there.
Some of these guys are doing, like, the schools of Ghost Town, they do some stuff online and then they come in for 2 or 3 days a week. Right,
they'll all die. They get in contact with each other.
Yeah,
it's fucking ridiculous.
I have to actually get temperature checked and the wristband at the front before I get even out of the building.
Jesus.
Oh yeah. So wait, you're in Orlando. Yeah. You're in the other building. I heard that building now has like boats and stuff in it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that was all bikes when I went.
Yamaha's right next to our shop.
Yeah, when I did. I think I did touring electronics there, like in 2012, I think. And that was the only time I ever went to Orlando, was for that class.
It's a smaller campus than Phoenix.
You know, I don't know, because you don't really see the campus.
It's only those two buildings.
Because, well, we just were in the one building.
Yeah, and then the one next to it.
They had like watercraft and outboard motors and stuff in there. And then they had
A12?
Yeah, and then they had HDU.
Yeah, HDU is kind of back in the back corner. And they kind of have their own thing back there.
So are you in the building where you like walk in and it's like a little miniature break room?
Yeah.
And that's where you like have lunch and shit, and then you go, and it's kind of like
they bring us box lunch. L shape, and then the Yamaha's right on the right hand side when you make the bend.
Yeah. It's the same building
section straight out.
I think Saki was over there when I went through.
I don't remember.
They didn't move shit around, but yeah. So tomorrow you will put that motor back together and probably be done by 1 o'clock. When it's all said and done, and your class ends at like 4, right?
So, do you guys each have your own motor, or do you have a partner?
No, we all have our own motor.
I will say that, you know, signing you up for the classes seem to be a lot smaller as far as, like, they only allow 8 or 9, 8 people.
It used to be 12.
Yeah, they only allow, like, 8 people in the classes now.
Yeah, it used to be
12,
because what they do is they
two teachers
have people start. Well, they have you start, they go over like the overview of everything, and then 6 guys would start on the Forester, and 6 guys would start on the street, and then you'd change, like, swap out motors. But, I don't know, it's cool, because it's a lot less time to get your stuff checked off, and you can ask more questions, and get a little bit more one-on-one with the teacher.
Yeah, I don't know your teacher that I think of. I don't think I know him.
Lysak?
Fry sack. Glasses? Yeah, I know who he is.
Little black goatee.
Is he male? I know who it is.
I think I know. When you said that Fry sack, he's got glasses. I think I know who you're talking about.
Is he wearing
about.
A black and orange striped shirt?
Does it say Harley Davidson on it? HDU? Yeah.
I think it says HDU, right? I think I know that guy.
I know that guy.
I knew a lot of the guys over at MMI in Orlando. Phoenix, not so much, but...
You know,
he's been here for like 20 years.
It would be weird So, like, you're going to go... What's going to be cool with you is, because you were neglected for so long over the years as far as being able to go to these classes, you're going to go to a gauntlet of them. So over the next couple of years, you're going to go to so many, you're probably going to have them again.
Yeah.
And then you'll have them again. And then you'll have them again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you're going to kind of get to know these guys, because you have like 8 classes you have to go to so that you can get to the level you actually perform at, and we can, you know, put on paper that you are what you say you are.
Yeah.
So
right.
That part's kind of cool because
so we can talk about that for a second because you know the Master Tech thing is a badge of honor, if you will, but it doesn't really say a lot about whether you're a good tech or not.
Oh, no.
You know, shame.
From a technical experience standpoint, you mean?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Anything, really, any standpoint. Like, Shane has not worn the master moniker, but Shane is a master tech.
Oh, yeah.
Jordan's still here?
I don't know. I heard him blowing shit off.
Hey, Jordan, are you still here?
Yeah, he's master. The only thing he hasn't done is live wire, which doesn't count as, you know, needed. But so the way it works for the people listening that don't know, there are basically stages of levels, and it starts with the staff level and then technician. I think it's advanced, expert, and then master. There are online courses you have to do for each level, and then there are instructor led courses you have to do from technician level up. Yeah. So yeah. The people that go through MMI get the first two dealer classes. If they do everything right and pass their assessments and, you know, are good at what they do, they come out as a technician level with those first two dealer classes done. This is what's supposed to make an MMI graduate appealing to a dealership, is that, hey man, those, you know, sending somebody to a class costs a couple thousand dollars when it's all said. They always said $5,000 in school. That's a top end of what it really costs when it's all said and done, but it's not far, you know, it's thousands of dollars. It's not hundreds of dollars. So when a dealership sees that, it's like, man, there's a couple of thousand dollars easily that I can save by hiring this guy.
Sure.
But not, you know, Shane's experienced it. Not all dealers actually send their techs to school.
Well, and part of that's because it is expensive.
It is an expense. It is not cheap.
Yeah.
So when I lived in Orlando, those first few levels of classes, most of them are offered in Orlando. So it was easy for my dealer to send me to those classes, and we were an hourly shop, so she made a hell of a profit margin off of us anyways. And that was the reason I was in that shop. It was because
aside from the hotel, the travel, the cost of the class, you also have to take into consideration
what you're
paying the tech a week of time to be there and learn.
Right.
But they're losing out the $119 an hour that he bills the entire. So that's a bigger hit, I think, on the grand scheme of things.
That's where, because you know you're like just for your deal. So you're getting, you know, 4 days of basically 100% paid wage for training.
Yeah.
And the class is $550. You're getting paid to be there. Your hotel is going to be like $400.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
We're paying for dinner because you get breakfast and lunch. And the flight was like $600 or whatever for the round trip. So, and then
$2,500 on average, probably.
And then, like you said, you know, you average between 50 and 60 build hours a week at $119 an hour. So, you know,
you figure 10 hours a day.
Yeah.
10 hours a day, you know, four days,
you know,
40 hours at $120 an hour. Fuck, that adds up.
Yeah.
And that's money he could be making.
Yeah.
You know, for the business. So,
and then
part of that is being staffed properly.
Come back from school and want to raise, and dealerships don't want to deal with that. So,
yeah.
And then other times like me, one of the shops, I had a 42 year guy who's 60 years old, been in the industry 42 years.
Yeah.
So you learn a lot from him.
Oh yeah.
And so they figure, well, if I can teach him and he can learn everything that he's going to learn at this class, and I don't have to spend the money on it and give him a raise, I'll just give him a little bit of a raise now and call it.
So we kind of talked about that before you called, which was, you know, one of the best ways to learn in a good shop, which I consider us a good shop because we all get along well, is from each other. You know, when we find something new, we show each other. You know, we're like, hey dude, you got to see this, you know. I feel the same way about those dealer classes, or at least it used to be that way, because when I was going through them, I was the 4 or 5 year guy, 3-4 year guy, and everybody else I was in class with were 10 or 15 year guys, and I learned a lot from those guys. When we were doing our homework and stuff, sitting around drinking beer and just talking, because one of the things people don't realize about this business is where you're at makes a lot of difference about what you see.
Yeah.
So the problems that you see in Phoenix and the problems that you see in Orlando are totally different.
Right.
And you might get some of the same problems, but what you see the most of is not the same. So, you know, you go to class with these guys that are like, man, we get these bikes all the time that do this, and it's always, you know, this. So one of the examples was down in Florida, because of the salt air and everything else, corrosion is an issue.
Corrosion, yeah.
So we would get, and one of the first symptoms that was very consistent was the voltmeter bounces. And that's one of the first complaints that we noticed it on. And what we found was the main fuse would get corroded, and it would still pass electricity and everything else, but it was fluctuating. So the voltmeter was showing it. And man, you pull that main fuse out, clean it, put some dielectric grease on, throw it back in, problem's gone. Now, the first few times you get that job, you spend an hour, hour and a half figuring that out.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's not that simple. Right. So then when you go to classes and you're talking to guys and you're like, dude, if you ever see this, go here, you know, and those little, you might get one or two, and each time you go to class, those little help outs are amazing. You know what you learn from other guys.
One guy was like, yeah, well, you know, sporties run a lot better, a lot quieter with 50 weight oil in them. We're talking about oil and oil, you know, oil pressure and all that. And he goes, yeah, because you're here in Florida.
Yeah.
Take that thing up north, it's not going to start in the winter.
Yeah.
You know, that's all relevant to where you're at. Some guys are having mud dauber issues where they're getting in to the vent lines for the fuel tank.
Yes, very common in Florida.
And cause, I mean, you know, freaking mud daubers or spiders. I mean, there's all kinds of weird stuff that certain, you know, geographic areas will see.
And these are things without these classes are hard lessons learned in the shop. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of where I was going with the topic tonight was, you know, what are the other ways that you can kind of learn these lessons without having to do it the hard way, you know?
And the networking is nice too, because, you know, I've had, you know, the luxury of working with a lot of cool techs from different shops through the years.
Absolutely.
And so there's guys that, you know, if nobody at our shop has any idea, I'll throw a line out and be like, hey man, have you ever come across this? And every once in a while, they'll be like, oh yeah, I know what that is.
Yeah. No, so, you know, that's connections in the industry. That's the other thing about going to dealer classes. It's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Meeting guys in the industry. In fact, that's kind of how you met Jordan, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But was dealer class.
Yep. He wasn't in my class.
Yeah.
I was there for Livewire, and he was there. He was getting his doing his one of his master classes, I think. Yeah, and
so the master classes, like all the way up until master, the pace of classes are about what Shane's talking about. You kind of do and you wait and you do and you wait and you do and you wait. Master powertrain is kind of like that. For Shane, it'll be like that because he knows the Milwaukee 8 motor pretty well. When I went through Master Powertrain, I had never torn a Milwaukee 8 motor apart before. So it was like 4 months after it was released. It was really quick. And so that was my, you know, entrance into it. And I don't think I was the first one done every time. You know what I mean? I don't think I was, you know, that guy. I was there and I made time and I made my grade and everything like that. But, you know, the real one that everybody talks about is Master Electrical. And, you know, long story short about Master Electrical is they give you a real workload is when it's all said and done. A good technician that understands electrical and can read a manual and knows to start in the beginning at, you know, the initial diagnostics. We'll do very well in that class, but, I mean, I think I might've had the highest grade in that class when I went through, if I didn't, that was second. And it, you know, but I've always kind of been the electrical guy. I watched people struggle, man. There was a pre Rushmore bagger in there that they did some audio diagnostics on that
Oh yeah, and yeah, it was like the switches.
It was super simple. It was super simple. It was like they had it was like when you push volume down on the back, it would go volume up. And when you push volume up, it would go volume up. And if you picked up the manual and read through the initial diagnostics for, I think it was in that section, it said if you have a switch giving you, you know, the function of another switch, then those two wires are shorted together. And I'm like, okay, so I went and disconnected the connector, grabbed my own meter. Sure enough, they're shorted together. I was done. 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And the teacher's like, and when you get to the master level, you know, before then they want you to do everything the way it's done in the book, no matter what, even if you understand it and you know a shortcut, it has to be done this way. When you get to master electrical,
they don't care.
Teachers say, I don't give a shit how you got there. As long as when I come over, you can explain it to me. And I know you understand what's going on.
Yeah.
So he comes over and he's like, you know, gives me this strange look because it was literally 5 minutes. And he's like, how did you get to this so quickly? You know, kind of grilling me. And I said, well, in initial diagnostics, it says this and my meter says the same thing. And he's like, you're right. And walked away. And that was the end of it. And I watched guys with breakout boxes. If you don't know what a breakout box is, it's a big pinned box. They make them for every connector damn near, and it allows you to test everything while it's connected.
And they easily start going through the flow charts. And at, at the end of every flow chart, if it passes all the tests, replace ECM.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then I'm like, walk it. No bullshit. I'm walking by these guys, like, start over, start over. Because you're not allowed to help each other. Like, that's a no-no. Yeah. And I'm like walking by, like, start over. So start at the beginning.
When did you go through Master Electrical?
I'd say 16 probably.
Was it before BCM? No, it did.
No. It was after. So it was around the time that people were bitching.
Yeah.
And they were doing something about it.
So, yeah. So I went through I think halfway through 14 when they, because they revised it. They revised Master.
They came out with the new, the new class.
Where you had to take it apart, put it back together again, and then run it. And then the class after you grades it.
Yeah. And you have to be within like 5% on the dyno or whatever it is. You got to make dyno numbers. You have to.
Yeah. You have to run it on the dyno to pass. So the bike has to run and you have to be able to do a full pull
without it grenading itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. On a brand new, just build under. Yeah.
Well, and not only that, but I don't know if they still do the master, engine class this way, but what I went through it, when you are taking it apart, you need to inspect everything that's done correctly because you're grading the guy that did it before you.
Correct.
So the week before, when the guy
if you suck, how can you grade someone else's work?
Well, because when you're taking it apart, they tell you, like, this is the way the push rod goes. If your push rods are upside down, I need to know. So because you don't realize that you're grading the guy before you until you get the motor disassembled.
And did they ever do like plant motors where they knew there was something wrong and they put something in there to see if you catch it or not?
No, not in that class. Okay. They do that in electrical.
Yeah. So
when I went to electrical, there's no, like, in most of the classes, like, you know, you probably had like some class time, right, Shane, where you guys went over like, this is this and this is this, and you wrote it down a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Like half the first half of the first day and then the first half today, probably.
When you go over lecture, this is what we're going to be doing. This is what you know, these are things you need to look for, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So when I went to Master Electrical, there were 8 people. That was the first class that they said there can be only 8 people in the class because there were any more and they wouldn't be able to, the instructor wouldn't be able to spend enough time for people to actually pass a class.
Yeah.
So I get to the class and you hear rumors, but at that time it was so new that nobody knew, but they were like, this is a 50% failure rate class. So you're like, motherfucker.
Yeah.
And it's BCMs. So it was all fairly new anyway. You know, I mean, the only thing you really had a BCM till 14 was Softails. And I mean, they never broke. So,
You
know, the new technology CAN bus is pretty
it's amazing.
Fucking reliable. It's system.
Fucking awesome. You
know, they run
great. Space. If you know how to work it, it's great for diagnostics. Great for everything.
Yeah. So we get in there and, the class t- teacher pulls us around and he's like, how many of you guys are retakes? Four guys raise their hand. And we were, and the rest of us are looking over like,
oh shit.
Oh my God. Half the class has already failed this class once.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, all the rumors are true.
Yeah.
And he says, and so he says, look, this isn't like the other classes you took. This is a test.
Yeah.
This is a 4-day test because if you're not at a master level electrical, you will not pass this class.
Yeah.
If you don't know what you're doing and you don't know how these systems work, you're in the wrong class.
There is something to say about that now, getting your master now. If you can pass master electrical, you do know your way around the electrical system fairly well.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Because then the first day, you go and he's like, this is what we're going to do. You need to diagram a starting system, diagram a charging system, diagram a starting, charging, ignition. What was the fourth one? Starting, charging, ignition. And there was something else. I can't remember what the fourth one was. But, and they were all on BCM bikes. So, like, what tripped everybody up was, you know, you're like, what wire? Then it's like just questions. Which wire is a starter relay? You're like, well, there isn't a starter relay. It's a BCM.
Yeah.
But there is a starter relay wire in the BCM. Correct. So when you start looking at the wire schematic and you're like, holy shit, look, starter relay. Okay. All right. Okay. Now I'm getting the feel for it. And then, so that was one task. And the next task was you had to bench test a starter motor. And then you had to bench test a relay.
Yeah.
And then.
Remember that.
That might have been it. I thought there were four stations, but I can't remember. But anyway.
Did you guys do oscilloscope?
The second day.
The last day. Yeah.
We did it the second day. And then the last 2 days were troubleshooting.
See, they did ours at the end because they were like, you need to focus on troubleshooting because this is where you're going to lose your time.
So,
and oscilloscope is not as important.
They revised it by then. And so the thing about it was, though, was the pace was so fast that you couldn't go backwards. So like the first day, if you weren't real keen on bench testing a starter motor, because we don't really do that anymore.
Yeah.
And yet, yeah. And you struggle trying to figure out how to do it, because not only do we not do it that much anymore, but I mean, how to do it is actually kind of confusing if you don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
You know, because you know, like you do the hold in, pull in test and you're like, so what do I now? You know, like, so now I just take this off. I don't get it. Yeah. You know what I mean? And like that kind of shit.
Yeah.
You're like, well, I take the wire off and it just snaps back. Is that supposed to happen? Is it not supposed to do that?
Yep.
So then day two is oscilloscope. And if you're not real savvy with computers, the oscilloscope fucking kicks this shit out of you.
Because everybody got their ass kicked by
oscilloscope. Because it's all computer. It's all a laptop and an oscilloscope.
I didn't have any problem because I got how it all worked and whatnot. And I'm good with computers. But I watched guys struggle with that. And then, it was like, man, this is so simple. Why are you not?
And then the last few days were troubleshooting. And what they do in master electrical is they don't bug the bikes. They put faulty components in the bikes. So it's actual real field failures. Yeah. It's not like bullshit, like what he's talking about.
So shit is sent in from warranty from tech services. They send it out.
Yeah. So, you know, there was a bike that like you turn the power on and every time you hit the button, everything shuts off, but the security flashes and you're like, what the fuck is this? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I've never even seen anything like this. And then you shut it off and the security will clear, turn the power back on. Everything works. Hit the start button, everything turns off and the security flashes and you're like okay.
yeah
you check your codes and there's like speed sensor high and you're like that doesn't even you know that those are your issues. And you're just like, and if you don't know how to go through the steps of troubleshooting, you're done.
So there was two, besides that one, there were two like I consider them bugged bikes that stood out to me. And one of which they took, everybody knows what a fuse looks like. It's basically a flat piece of metal in a plastic housing. And the little bit of metal in between the two things is what makes the fuse, you know, 30 amp or whatever. So they actually took one of these fucking things apart and broke. I don't know what's going on out there.
The ice machine?
Yeah, I think so. Either that or Jordan fell off.
I think Jordan's out there.
Jordan fell down the stairs.
Oh, so.
Oh, no. He's using
an impact. Oh, okay. It's an impact.
He's still working.
Darth Vader, yeah. Are they welding through the door?
So they took this fuse, and if you could picture, you know, the two fat sides that go into the fuse and then the little squiggly line in the middle.
Yeah.
They broke it so that the little squiggly line was whole all the way across, but it was broken right at the terminal. So when a fuse blows, they pop, and you know. But if you pulled this thing out and looked at it, it looked good. And so yeah, you needed to use a tester and you had to test it. That one was a good one. That one got me for a little bit. And there was another one where they took, you know, the BCM, we're talking about BCMs. The BCMs have a big power wire that go into them. People don't realize it, that one separate wire is actually the power into the BCM. And it looks like an antenna or something weird. You wouldn't think it was power the way it's laid out.
Yeah.
Well, they took like a, say you took that connector and cut like 6 inches of it off and then tuck that into the fucking harness. So it looks legit. You know what I mean? Like it looks legit, but it's actually about 6 inches into the harness. There's nothing there. So there was no power to the BCM, and you look at it and you're like, well, the wiring should be fine. You know, that's one of the problems as a technician you get to, especially on a new bike, you know, oh, this thing's got 1,000 miles on it. It's not a wiring issue. That might not be true.
Could be.
Yeah. It could be. And you replace components because you're like, I don't want to spend the time to figure out if this is a wiring issue or whatever else. So a lot of guys will just throw components at it.
Yeah.
Well, the thing was 60-70% of the time, it's not a component issue. It's a connection or wiring issue.
I'm a firm believer in taking the new component, installing it, reproducing the symptom and or not, and putting the old component back in if I can, and then reproducing the symptom. And if I can reproduce it with the old one and not with the new one, I'm pretty confident that I got it. You know what I mean? Yeah. If I'm in that system. You know, the wiring tests are a big fucking deal. I mean, shit, in the last couple of weeks, how many different wiring issues have I found? A bunch. They were just like wires. They were like just bent or broken wires.
Or factory stuff.
No, factory stuff.
Yeah.
Because they'll do joints where one wire comes in and then two wires go off, and that joint just doesn't get soldered properly. Or whatever it is. Or something, maybe when they're putting together, gets broken. I had a CAN bus wire broken in the middle of the fucking backbone where there's no stress.
They had like, even just going back to like, what was it, like 05 or 06 maybe, they had the, where the wire would go through the tunnel on the baggers and then they came down for the injectors, that hard 90 degree.
Oh yeah. And they break right there.
Break that wire up there, and then you'd like, the front cylinder would stop firing and they're like, I don't know why.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, your first thing to do when you don't have a cylinder's not firing, number one thing,
spark.
Change your spark plugs.
That bike, the gray bike, I won't say the name, that I tore apart today, as I was tearing it apart, fuel injector wires were rubbing on something. They're silver. I can see them. And I put blue tape around that shit so I don't forget it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I was like, I'm going to put blue tape here so I know what this means. I need to fix that before I put it back together. But yeah, that shit, those fuel injector wires are a pain in the ass, man. They've taken some abuse through the years.
But you know, the cool thing about the classes though is you kind of, you know, you see these weird, strange things. And even like when you do touring electronics, you know, that's a big electrical class because that's where you go through ABS troubleshooting and you do, you know, basically the whole audio system on touring bikes. It's really all it is.
Yeah. You can do a boom now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now they do a boom too in touring electronics, and they go pretty deep into how boom two works, because the first thing that they admit is that boom two instructions suck dick.
You know, it's not even that. There's so much.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're just like, I don't even know what to do.
Well, that's the idea. And that's what they do. They kind of, they give you a broad view of what you're doing and why you're doing it, so that you understand that the pinky harness, you know, that we call it, that runs from the front to the back, needs to be connected here. And when you change the amplifier
setting, it goes here.
Yeah, well, like the CBOs.
Unless it's CBO, then it comes from the
back. Yeah, like the CBOs, and then they send signal different place. I mean, it's fucking crazy, man. Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, they overcomplicate the shit out of it, man.
Yeah, and so, you know, you in that environment, though, you know, when they're bugging these bikes, they're doing their best to try to make it stuff that you're actually going to encounter. You know?
Yes.
And so, you know, our whole introduction to that electrical class was like a 10-minute thing. Like, you're going to get your fucking ass handed to you, and you are going to feel like you're not going to finish.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And well, their curriculums come from their warranty and tech calls. What do they see a lot of? You know what I mean? And I'm sure that's where that curriculum comes from. We see so many people have BCM, you know, replace BCMs for no reason.
Yeah.
So then BCM testing becomes part of that class so that you understand. That's why they went in so depth into the CAN bus, because, man, when CAN bus came out, all the Harley guys had no fucking idea how that worked.
Well, and when, you know, when we went through it, when they first came out, they didn't fail.
Yeah.
Because you're seeing them fail, you know, and the instructor even told us that. He's like, look, you know, the mechanical side of this, with the way manufacturing is now, the technology advancements in, you know, gaskets and metallurgy and just the way everything is made, it's so much more precise. You just don't really have mechanical failures anymore. And you don't. I mean, you just don't have them that much. How many bikes come in here with no compression in the rear cylinder? Almost none.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's so rare that it happens that you're just like, well, I don't even know what to do with this now. Now it's almost like mechanical failures are the
taking
difficult.
The
they're the electric, difficult things to diagnose now because everything is electrical.
Well, yeah. And with the new motor, you know, the Milwaukee 8, we got so many years with the twin cam. When we heard a noise, we kind of knew what it was. And now when we hear a new noise, we're all like, I wonder what that is. You know, you know, but. This is, like I said kind of earlier, this is really what separates the aftermarket shops from dealers, is that the guys in the aftermarket shops are not really offered this type of schooling. And, you know, maybe that's a void in the industry that needs to be filled. You know, maybe there is.
Well, I think
an aftermarket class, like the guy we talked to in the previous episode about, you know, starting an online school. I actually thought there was a reason I brought him on. I thought it was a really good idea. I think that being able to get with, maybe not so much, I think it's going to be hard to get the manufacturers into that because they want to support their dealers. But, you know, getting with an MMI or somebody like that and developing a curriculum and providing something that aftermarket shops could send their guys to get certified, I think would be a big deal.
I think that at MMI and at these schools, you know, I think it just fucking sucks that the schools are so expensive.
Yes.
And they're not truthful with the students, because without students, there are no instructors. You know, without instructors, there's no school.
I hear that a lot, but I can tell you in my experience with MMI.
But here's the deal. Any one of us could go to any aftermarket shop and we're just going to be completely fine, because it doesn't matter. We have enough experience that you don't need all that extra support, you know?
Well,
I call tech services now, I'm like, really? So I'm the first one that's ever encountered this problem. Seriously. Come on, man.
Yeah. There's a few times when they start asking me dumbass questions. Did you check the oil? Did you check the battery?
Now, and I'm like, hey man, though, right?
I've been doing this 10 fucking years. I'm not an idiot. I've done all the basic stuff, or I wouldn't be calling you.
Right.
Okay. The only time I call tech is either warranty related, something that, you know, the bike's under warranty, and at that point I want tech's approval for whatever I'm doing, because I'm not 100% sure that I can send that back and they're going to say no, you know what I mean? Or say yes. Other than that, it's, I am knee deep in something that I have no fucking idea what I'm doing. Like that street. Had a street with a strange starting issue, made a crazy noise, didn't want to start. I know, you know, about what Shane knows at this point about streets, which is what we do in class. You know, like he said, he'll probably never tear one apart again. I haven't torn one apart since, you know, school. There's no need. Those motors are actually pretty fucking good, dude.
But when you do.
Well, yeah, when I do, and so
don't make it past five.
I got lucky. Crash. Yeah, I got lucky enough to get Jason, who was on the show, when I called and was like, "Oh God, I got you, Jason. Good fucking deal. Here's the deal: the bike's not under warranty. I just have no idea what to fucking do. You know, what have you seen? What and they have the ability to kind of look through history and stuff and see what they've seen, and they gave me a few pointers. I didn't nail it on the first time. That one could have been done better on the first time, but I went with what they said, and if I really sat down and tried to work out how it all worked, I could have figured that out, you know. But you know, it is what it is. This shit happens. That's the name of the game, you know. That's why when the new guys are getting all pissy and whining, me and Mike talking about that quite a bit. You know, the new guys are out there pissing and moaning, and it's like, dude, you have not been doing this nearly long enough to be able pitching. To do that. I'll take the bitch in from the guys that have been doing this for 10 years. That's fine. You know, we're all here because we want to be here. You're here because you think you need to be here. There's a difference. You know what I mean? Like you don't have to be here, and you're providing not a lot more than a body, right?
Yeah. You know? Stop trying to show me how good you are at this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
you're not.
Well, and that's the thing. It's the same thing. Anything. It has nothing to do with wrenching. It's anything in life. The people that try so hard to prove something are the ones that are just trying to prove it to themselves because they know they can't do it. You know what I mean? And I think as a technician, we all come out kind of, you know, wanting to be that guy that's the fastest guy in the shop and does everything the best. And I know I was. I as an hourly tech for years, I build 120-130% efficiency like an idiot, making other people fuck tons of money while I fucking couldn't pay my bill. You know? And you know, $9.25 a fucking hour as a technician in 2012, you know, in 2011, whatever the fuck it was. And I'm busting my ass, billing 50, 60 hours a week, getting paid 40 at fucking $9 an hour, you know, while they're billing $80, $90 an hour for what I'm doing. And it wears on you after a while because I'm an idiot. You know, I see this shit. It's like, man, I've made you a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Why don't you want to pay me? You know? So Shane kind of touched on it earlier, which as you grow up, you know, I'm advanced. I'm electrical. You go back to your boss. Say, hey, man, is this worth anything in money? I want more money. And one of the things I tried to do in my last dealership, and it's really hard, it's harder than you would think, was set up a structure for, because they were an hourly shop. It wasn't flat rate. Totally different in an hourly shop. And that structure was supposed to start, you know, say, for example, as a staff level technician, you make $10 an hour. You know what I mean? When you get to technician level, you can make $11 an hour plus $1 a build hour or whatever it is. Okay. Sure. So then you do your classes and then you get to advanced level. Well, at an advanced level, you can make anywhere from $12 to $15 an hour and anywhere from $1 to $3 a build hour. This is how you factor in, you know, how long a person's worked there or how good they are at what they do, you know, and you have to give yourself some variances in there. But man, it is really hard to develop a system like that, that works, that people are happy with, that the boss is happy with, that, you know, works. But to me, that's the way it should work. You know, if I'm a new technician, I'm technician level and I'm going to classes, I should know it. I'm not saying I expect more money, but I should know what to expect. You know what I mean? In those instances. And it seems like the perfect idea at the time until you go flat rate. And then, you know, the guys that can do the job really never go back from flat rate until you get to a point, you know, that you're just like, fuck it, I'm just doing this for fun.
Even then.
I mean, why?
Once you're proficient, you know, you're like, why would I ever want to be paid hourly again?
Yeah.
Fuck that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, you know, you do. And I think another thing that's great about dealerships that people don't understand that are in the aftermarket, because I spent my whole life in aftermarket.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm like the opposite of what happens with most cases. You know, I grew up doing aftermarket. I went to aftermarket. I had my own shop. Then I went to MMI to learn the Harley technology and all that stuff. Because, you know, when you see the shift in the way things move, you know, adapt or die.
Yeah. Well, it was around that time that everything kind of got a lot more technical.
Right.
You know, back in the 80s, 90s,
didn't matter.
A Harley was pretty easy to fucking work on. You know, there wasn't BCMs and all this dumb shit that you had to worry about. It was mechanical switches, and if you understood electrical and how shit worked, you could figure it out. You know, it wasn't hard.
Sure.
And so, you know, I even went a couple years Japanese you know what I mean? To start to learn that side of it, because that's, you know, that's what is all that stuff, you know?
But together, they have a bigger share of the market than Harley does alone, you know? All the Japanese. All
of everybody.
Together. Yeah.
But then when I went to, then I said, you know what? Fuck this. I'm done with this. Because, you know, the thing about aftermarket is it's super random. You never know what's going to happen. You never know what you're going to get. And almost everything is kind of shitty because, you know, it's cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, you know, when you take your bike to an aftermarket shop, it's because it's less money. It's not because they're going to do such a better job.
Yeah.
It's because the parts are made of lower quality, so they're not as expensive.
Or they're going to do something the Harley shop or the, you know, the dealership won't do.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And the reason the dealership.
So that's where the Japanese market aftermarket is really good, because like a Honda shop, they won't fuck around with shit that's going to void your warranty. You go to a Honda shop and tell them you want to build a fucking
stretch swing arm,
motor and this and that. And they're like, get fucked. Dude. Yeah. Get the fuck out of here. We're not fucking with that. Yeah. Shit,
man. There's a dealer. A lot of
dealerships are that way too.
I was just about to say a lot of Harley ships dealerships are the same way.
Yeah.
I think the biggest difference between dealerships in Harley now and Japanese is the unfortunate truth with Japanese motorcycles is they don't hold their value. So,
no.
At a Japanese dealership, all you do is warranty work.
Well, yeah, but how many aftermarket or not aftermarket? How many cool things does Honda make for their bike?
It makes a pretty cool ship, but not Honda.
But I'm just saying Honda. Like if you bought a Goldwing and went into the dealership, was like, man, I want to put some cool shit on my Goldwing. What you got? They're like, we got stock fucking parts. Lights. Yeah. Kuryokin. That's it. You know, there's not. It's not like Honda has this big P&A. Business like right. Harley does.
Yeah.
Harley, you know, that's what's made Harley is the fact that no two are really exactly alike.
The funny thing with
everybody does one thing or something
a little bit different
that changes it from everybody else.
The funny thing is in the Jap market, it's the dirt bikes that are like that.
Yeah.
You know, like the dirt bikes, there's all kinds of shit for dirt bikes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you can get all these different wheels.
You know, the off-road market is bigger than the on-road market.
Yeah. So, but the road market for, you know, if you want to put different wheels on your R1, the dealership's going to be like, why?
Why?
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. It's already pretty much maxed out.
Yeah, they're like, really? Seriously? Why are you going to do that?
Yeah, carbon fiber wheels? What the fuck you want carbon fiber wheels for?
Yeah. My neighbor did that.
Yo, dude.
First time that I ever saw BST wheels was on an R1.
I rode, like,
2000.
We might have talked about this before, because one of the nastiest bikes I ever rode was an R-Road, and R1, and I rode it for about a half a mile and turned it around. And was like, I can't, I'm not riding this. It was the first time I hit the gas. Fuck up and was fat, way faster than I was expecting. And I was like,
what was
turned it around bike? And was like, nope, I'm not killing myself on this thing tonight. You have a good night.
What's the supercharged Kawasaki?
The H2?
Did you see it twice on the dyno? On the dyno drags?
Is that what I heard?
Yes.
Holy fuck. I was in here and I was like, what the fuck is on the dyno, dude?
That thing is an absolute slayer. And I watched the guy pull it off the dyno. It got a little hot.
Yeah.
So he's like, you know, kind of running it, circulating the water and stuff. And he gets on it, takes off. He makes the rip down the road like Ty and everybody does. Short shifting it.
Yeah.
It's yanking the front wheel off the ground. He's not even trying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's 300 horsepower.
Yeah. They're fucking ridiculous.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, I heard that thing.
Like
it sounded like demon a jet screaming plane or something. It's
crazy.
Yeah. I was in here and it was like, and I was like, what the fuck is on the dyno drag out there? I was like, holy and shit, dude.
They took poor John and put him on the dyno next to that thing.
Yes. On his dual sport.
Yeah.
Yes. I saw that because I went out and I was like, oh, maybe that's John's bike? I don't know. Sport
bike. I guess we can see what happens. Yeah. Got slayed so bad.
Yeah. So for those that don't know, we had dyno drags out front, which is like a trailer with two dyno things set up and you drag race. And yeah, a bunch of people came out, brought some crazy shit. It's always fun. You know, the first year we had like nobody there. So we did like 883 drags and dumb shit. You know, we had some fun. This year we were just so damn busy. I don't think anybody
we
got
two weeks in a row. Anything. We had some bad weather the first week, and it came out.
I think I was in the dyno half the day, so I didn't even hear that Cali running.
Well, yeah, the first day when nobody came out, Jamie and I drag raced the live wires.
Yeah, topped out at 106 miles an hour.
That's every single time.
Yeah,
but went the 330 foot mark, 98 miles an hour.
Yeah, And that's fucking that's crazy, moving, dude.
From 0 to 98 miles an hour in 330 feet.
So I think if you could get like that limiter off, I don't think there'd be very many bikes on the road.
We talked about this like early on, like yeah. who's going to be the first one yeah. to come to market with some kind of,
if that thing didn't top out at 106,
nobody.
Holy fuck, so? Dude,
there's no money in it.
Yeah. There's only 700 or 800 a year made.
Are you going to spend like, you know, $15,000-$20,000 in R&D to sell two of them?
Man, people hop up Teslas and stuff like that. There's a
couple yeah, of they've sold a fuck ton of Teslas. Well,
I mean, but you know, they sell 500,000 Teslas a year. They sell like, they've sold like maybe 1,000 Livewires
total. Well, supposedly they're making like 700 to 800 a year. So Livewire? Maybe 2 year. Yeah. Maybe they've made 1,500, 2,000 of them. Maybe I'm going to say they've sold 1,200 of them.
But I haven't paid enough attention to what's going on in the market with it. Is there like a niche, like a little group of people that really love that bike and are going to maybe want to do something with it?
It's just collectors.
Okay. And they're going to want to leave it stock.
I'm
in a group on Facebook that's Livewire owners. I'm in a couple of Livewire owners. There's quite a few people out there that are very avid riders.
Well, there you go. That's what it takes. A couple of guys that are just really enthusiastic about that bike. That will connect with the right person that will
make it run. There's been some charging issues along the way. That's why there's been a recall. There's a recall now for the onboard charger. It's just an update, something stupid. But I actually, like about 6 months or so, watched people were having trouble. So they'd go out and ride their bike all day, come back, and it wouldn't want to charge. And like weird things, they go out to a charger and it wouldn't fast charge or whatever's going on. There's a bunch of charger issues going on. And the recall that came out, I wasn't a surprise when I saw it. I was like, yeah, I've been seeing there's been a bunch. And people were kind of said the same thing. Like, well, I brought it in a dealership. They updated it. Everything's fine. You know what I mean? It was like, there wasn't like, oh my God, this thing's a piece of shit or whatever. They're like, well, I brought it to a dealer and they did this and everything was fine. You know? So I think that's why they recalled it, to say, all right, those of you that aren't having problems need to get in here and update your shit. And it'll fix.
So to make sure you don't.
Yeah. To make sure you don't. So.
But, listen, fellas, I had to call the wife and check in with them and the kids. Let me hop off.
Yeah, man. Look at your phone and text me, Shane.
Oh, what the fuck?
Right. It must have sent you some boobs.
I was trying the whole damn show to distract him with all kinds of weird ass photos.
He's like a more stone. Dick
Hey, we'll see you Friday, man. Have fun.
All right, brother. Hey, let me know when you're coming in. I'll come get you.
I think I'm in at 9 tomorrow.
All right,
later.
Later, brother.
Yeah. So, but yeah, you know, anybody in any job, I think you have to be proactive on trying to make yourself better.
Yeah.
You know, you're really good at it too, but sometimes you kind of have to. It sounds really bad, but the social media, the YouTube, the things like that aren't all bad. When somebody brings out something cool, like, man, holy shit, I've never seen that before. And then you go on and Google it. Some guy's got a fucking video where he installed it. That is, you know, that's learning. That's preparing yourself for maybe when it comes in your shop.
Yeah, it keeps you current.
We've been lucky here and, you know, we joke about it, but. You know, we went to the drag show last year and that Recluse clutch was out. You know, we're all three of us, I think we're like, yeah, we're going to sell some of those.
Yeah.
We're going to fucking see how these perform. And we've had the ability to do that. But, you know, when you see cool shit, if nobody's making a video or nobody, you know, has done it, there's only one way to do it. And that's sell it and fuck it. Hope it goes good.
Tried some things that haven't, you know, gone to plan.
Oh, absolutely.
Tried some things.
That's one thing I don't think people realize is, yeah, we've done a lot of motors and we've done a lot of shit, but we've done shit that didn't work. That's how we knew that this works better.
Yep, don't do that.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, Mike did a lot of that, you know, when he was back there building this shit was, you know, this works, this doesn't. Hey, man, we put this together and I've seen Mike many times put something together and be like, nope, we're going to change the cam. Or we're going to do something different because this is not working. You know, there's a dip there.
As time goes on, it's going to become more and more because there are more and more combinations being developed for this platform. all the time. There's more and more stuff to try.
Yeah, we got new stuff coming.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens with that too.
Yeah, the shit that we're doing now is great.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys got some stuff going on.
To be discussed in a future episode. Yeah.
Above my head, put it that way. Definitely above my head. So I know where my strengths and weaknesses are, and that's out of my wheelhouse. But
pushing the envelope.
Yeah. We'll wait until shit's solid.
There's no non-disclosure agreements on this episode. So
yeah.
Just gonna have to see it. You'll have to see it when it hits YouTube.
Right.
Yeah. Pretty much. And one of these days. The video's running. One of these days, I'm going to get shit up on my YouTube, too. Oh, but
shit. Is it on, actually? It's still running. Can't believe that.
Yeah. I got a plug in. Every time I have a problem, man, I try to fix that problem. We're getting to a point. Look at this. We've made it. It's working.
It's big.
It's big, and it's big. Hard.
It's hard.
What's that, Shane?
It's a big, hard one son.
Cock, two cock. Three cocks.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And then I sent him a bunch of pictures of naked dudes on motorcycles. Yeah. And I texted him. I'm like, man, I'm trying to break your concentration. You're like dialed in, man. Can't get you.
You know, what's funny is somebody put a men's calendar on the new guy's toolbox. Like one of those.
Oh, that was Snap-on.
Yeah, it was. Was it Snap? It's got like dudes all over it.
It's either Snap-on or Macko, the rep thing. He's like, hey, I got some calendars. And I was like, oh, men's. And he's like, yeah. And I was like, go put that on that white toolbox over there. He's like, well, I don't want to get in trouble. I was like,
oh, you gave it to Matt.
Who the hell are you going to? Who's going to tell you did it?
Yeah. So we walk over and there's like this dude with his shirt off or whatever. And then somebody put a little heart and an arrow and Marcus. That's funny. And I looked over and somebody was like, what the fuck is this? And I looked over and I was like, that's fucking awesome is what that is.
Well, it's like, you know, on Tyler, you know, on his, when Mac brought him those magnetic wish lists and he like slapped that on his thing. And I went over and wrote number one, it's hand strength.
Yeah. Soft hands, Tyler. Yeah.
He's all, fuck you. And I was like, well, you gotta get
it. Hey, I'm not like, I ain't going to go to a gym and throw around a bunch of weight, but my hand strength has always been very good.
There's just something about the way it works that you're just like,
dude, we had a gripper in my high school, which is like, if you were to picture two iron bars like this, about that far apart that you could grab, like they came together. And then down below was a straight up pole. You put like 45 pound regular weights like you would do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the like couple hundred pounds.
Huh.
And people were like, you know, because I was 160 pounds soaking wet in high school, but I could fucking grip more than I could bench. You know what I mean? And I'd be like, oh yeah, stack them up, watch this. And people were like, god damn, dude, you got a strong grip. I'm like, fuck yeah, I do. I ain't strong in the arms, but I got a strong ass grip.
I'll fucking choke your ass.
Yeah. Come here, motherfucker. I'll choke you. Yeah. You know, it takes 11 pounds of pressure to pop your eyeballs out.
That is a fact.
Like, 11, wow. Like pushing in on your eyeballs, 11 pounds of pressure and they'll pop out.
Why do they pop out if you push them in?
Because they're like elastic. You know what I mean? They're kind of rubberish.
Like, dig it out.
So you like,
maybe
push on the side.
I know it, yeah. Maybe it's a side thing, but I know it only takes 11 pounds of pressure to pop your eyeballs out. I don't know where I learned that, but that's fucking terrifying. Weird, right? Yeah. Yeah, that is terrifying. Yeah. It's like, dude, oh god, don't pop my fucking eyeball out, dude. So I wonder, like, if somebody, because you've seen this shit, everybody's seen it, you know, somebody's eyeball pop out.
I've never seen somebody's eyeball pop out.
Oh, I have.
Fucking weird. Everybody's seen it. Everybody's seen somebody's eyeball pop out.
So, like, do you think their sight, like, states?
Yeah, it's still connected.
Did you ask them? You saw it happen.
No, I didn't.
Like, hey, can you see the ground and
I mean, there's like, it's fucking weird.
Dude, your eyeball popped out. Hey, can you see me and the ground?
I think we've done enough for tonight. Thanks for listening. Talking Brap. TalkingBrap.com.
Next episode, I promise, we're going to have, what does the MVO hate less?
Yeah, we need to work on that a little bit. We might have to wait till next season.
Why?
Because I think.
So good.
So we got Thanksgiving coming up.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm going to get a second episode out this month. Just a warning for the listeners. but I think we can probably record one in early December, and then Christmas, New Year's, all that shit.
I'll have it ready for that then, because he's fired up. He's ready to go.
All right. Well, then we need to figure out some kind of intro, like some kind of little thing. Yeah, we'll work on that. But I think we're going to do one more this year, which will give us 16.
That's a good number.
And then we'll see how January, February, all that goes. We will either do nothing or send back some episodes. We'll see. We will see. But thanks for listening. Like I said, check us out, talkingbrap.com. Instagram. That's really the only one I use. Stay off the others.